Y'all know what time it is. It's the Air Raid Podcast time, presented by Viva the Matadors. You are on with Mr. Albie Shore. And once again, like always, I have Dylan Smythe with me. What's up, Dylan?
Dude, I am, like, riding an all-time high right now. I basically peaked on Twitter. I'm kicking your ass in fantasy. And we beat Houston.
Well, you didn't have to bring me down with your excitement, but you know what? It's whatever. And joining us for the first time this year, but y'all have heard of him before, we have Jeremy Gillen. Germ, what's up?
Yeah, what's up?
That's it, just yell, what's up? See, I knew we should have invited somebody else.
Amateur hour.
I'm going to thrash this because you've made me wait so long. I've been planning. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, Germ, I'm glad to have you on the pod. You're the first Viva person we've had on the pod this season, so you should be happy about that.
Oh, I'm honored. I really am.
You should be. Wait, it's a very exclusive list.
This whole time, I'm excited.
I told him I invited him, and then he was being a smart ass about it. And I was like, BRB, I'm going to call Jacob.
We should.
Hey, but no, Jacob's great. He should be on next, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, everybody before Zach is kind of the.
Everybody before Zach. Oh, my Lord. Everybody before Zach.
Yes. Or like if the sky is falling, then we're going to ask Zach to get on because he is like the most pessimistic person on Viva. So.
Oh, yeah. I'm ready. Burn the bridges, then Zach all the way.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So, guys, Saturday, a team that likes to wear white decided to come into Jones AT&T Stadium. They like white so much because, you know, they didn't want the heat to come down on them. They wanted to stay cool the whole game. But it didn't really work out well for them. How did y'all like? All right, Dylan, you go first. Tell me a little bit about the game. What'd you like about it?
It was beautiful. It was awesome. Alan Bowman was incredible. And you're probably all hating the sound of my voice right now talking about Alan Bowman, but I told you so. He's awesome. Alan Bowman for Heisman.
Jeremy, what about you?
Adjustments. Man, a lot of good coaching went into this game. It didn't seem like it at the beginning, but on both sides of the ball, offensive and defensively, I saw a lot of great adjustments that really kind of broke us out of the common shootout narrative that gets put on Tech. We were able to, you know, put Houston on hold and then get a couple touchdowns ahead. So I think that really did a good number for us.
So it's very annoying being on the pod with one guy who's so like pro Alan Bowman and one guy who's so pro Cliff Kingsbury. But on Saturday, both of your fan bases came together as one, as Alan Bowman and Cliff Kingsbury both. It was, I mean, Jeremy, you're right. And you actually touched on it. I was going to get it later in the pod. But we've been begging Cliff Kingsbury to make in-game adjustments for 5 years. We've been begging for him to do it. He hasn't done it for 5 years. The sixth year, he decides to do it. And it's exactly what he did. I don't think I've ever seen Kingsbury or Gibbs ever make in-game adjustments until Saturday. It was amazing, and they did it on both sides of the ball. I do want to touch on before we even get to the offensive stuff, defensively, Gibbs. I mean, what they did to Derek King in the second half was amazing. It was great. I you know, to see them do that was fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to say, like Jeremy brought up adjustments, and you kind of touched on a little bit. That's who really made the adjustment for me. It was David Gibbs. We gave up huge chunk plays in the first half. And then we really only gave up – we did give up 21, but the last one was in garbage time. We really only gave up 2 scores in the second half,
And one of the scores was because of the muffed punt by Anton Bowman.
Yep.
So really, it was really just one drive that equaled a touchdown in the second half. Basically what they did – and people don't know – what they did was is that from what I can tell is their main game plan going into the game was we're going to make Derek King beat us with his arm. Right? We didn't want him to run. And in the first half, he was doing that. He was beating us with his arm. He was amazing in the first half. He was throwing the ball all over the field. And mainly because they wanted to keep him in the pocket. And they were getting pressure on him, but still keeping him in the pocket. Second half, what seemed to happen was that they said, you know what? Eli Howard, Lonzel Gilmore, Tony Jones, y'all go after him. But instead of – we're going to actually go after him. But this time, we're going to put a spy, Dakota Allen, Rico Jeffers. We're going to have y'all spy him at all times. So when we do go after him – Now, if he tries to run, we have somebody chasing him at all times. And so now he's not just comfortable in the pocket. Now he has somebody touching him, and when he tries to run, there's somebody right there for him, and that's what disrupted him in the second half. That is the adjustment they made at halftime, and it worked perfectly.
Yeah, you started to see a lot more defensive linemen getting in, I think, as well in the second half. The Houston's lack of depth, really, throughout their offensive line, and then the defensive line, I'll get into that later, kind of blew up in the second half when our guys are still going full speed with those adjustments. And, yeah, Derek King kind of just crumbled in the second half. Didn't see a lot from him.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think one thing, and we, in the first half, I personally was very annoyed by our secondary. Our secondary didn't play great in the first half. But at the same time, a lot of that had to do with because they're holding their coverage for 8 seconds, 8 seconds or more. That's an eternity for a secondary. So once the D-line actually started not just getting pressure on Eric King, but actually getting to King, well, now you only got to hold your coverage for 4 or 5 seconds. That's a lot easier. You can do that. Coverage will always break down eventually. And so the fact that they don't have to hold their coverage for as long, I think, really helped the secondary in the second half get to the ball. So offensively, what were some of the adjustments y'all saw offensively?
So it's just kind of the overarching narrative. What was obvious to me is that we started to come to our very balanced, our new kind of balanced scene. We're running the ball, giving it off to Henry, and then we're passing it, kind of trying to stay on both sides. And then the run wasn't really working for a little bit, so I noticed that Kingsbury really went pass heavy and let Bowman carve up the defense. And then once we went pass heavy for like the entire first half, the rest of it at least, man, they got tired because they're busy chasing. And in the second half, we ran it a lot, and it was really successful. And I think that's something maybe going forward, there's going to be a lot more depth down the road. But, like, trying to stay pass heavy with a prolific passer, if it stays this way, might prove beneficial, wearing out some of the linebackers and defensive backs so that we can, if we can get to the second level with our run game, might be a little easier to pick up yards after contact.
Good.
I was just going to say, I was really excited to see something I wanted to see from Bowman was to let, like, clip Kingsbury, let him throw the ball more than 30, 40 yards down the field. And he did. He finally let it fly. And it was really awesome to see some of those deep balls in the closing half of this game.
Yeah, I mean, and one thing is that it seems like Cliff Kingsbury finally let the reins off of Bowman a little bit. And that's kind of nerve-wracking, right? When you have a true freshman quarterback, to have him go out there, you're kind of still nervous, like, you know, this is a good defense. I don't know what we should do with him. And he kind of just said, you know what? Screw it. You do you. You do you, fam. Go ahead and launch it. And that's exactly what Bowman did. First quarter, I agree with you. I think first quarter, the reins were on a little bit. Do short passes. Do this. I think after the first quarter, like, you know what? The only way we're going to beat this team is by slinging it. And he let him sling it. Even though Alan Bowman is the worst scrambling quarterback ever. Oh, my God. He's just – his form is so terrible, but it works.
Sure. So people don't like his form, blah, 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 blah. Man, something that people really came down on Bowman on was like his lack of arm strength in the first game. And then the second game, didn't see him throwing a lot of deep ball. I think he really shut people up this game, especially late with a lot of absolute dimes that he was placing for people like Wesley and Vasher. Like some of those throws you're expecting senior veterans to make after, you know, years and years of practice, but like he was just doing it like it was nothing. I think it's a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, I think the arm strength complaint were for people that didn't watch him in the spring, because in the spring he showed up his arm strength. I was never was there a time, and I think that had more to do with Kingsbury saying, "No, nah, don't throw it deep. I don't really trust you yet." You know, I've never in the spring though, when it came time to it, and when the reins were off a little bit in the spring, and you're going to begin with twos. He was launching them deep. He was doing a lot of these throws, and we talked about it, you know, in the offseason, how we you know, I agreed with you, Dylan, as far as Bowman being the most talented quarterback most talented passer that we have on staff. And the main reason why I thought Carter was going to get the job was simply because of his experience. Well, now Bowman's experience. Now Bowman got 2 starts under his belt, played basically virtually 3 full games. Bowman got the experience now. So, sorry, Carter, you're benched.
Right, and exactly what you said. We were worried. He was a freshman. You were worried about those freshman mistakes. He's thrown 133 passes now without an interception. So you could put all that to bed.
Yeah, you benched. So another adjustment that I think that was made, and I think there was even a bigger adjustment than even us running the ball more, was Ed Oliver in the first quarter kind of – It took him a little while to get going, but he was balling. Like, it got to a point. All those holding penalties we had in the first half, and Tyler Dupree just had an article that he put out Sunday, but he about the O-line getting improving throughout the game. But I think the one thing is, in the first quarter, all those holding penalties was because of Ed Oliver. Ed Oliver, I think we got 5 holding penalties in the first quarter, and like 4 of them were because of Ed Oliver. Like, he was a beast. And so what we did was, he said, you know what? That guy's pretty good. Let's double and triple him at all times. And not only that, but let's run the ball past him. Let's make him work. So it wasn't just that they were getting tired. It was, let's make Ed Oliver tired. You heard the announcers saying, oh, you know, he's this well-conditioned athlete. And it was kind of like Kevin Johns was like, okay, let's try it.
Let's see. Yeah.
and that's exactly – that's kind of one thing that – I think that's one big adjustment that I saw, was because Ed Oliver was past this about half of the second quarter. We didn't hear from him again, other than the fact that he was exhausted on the sideline. You know, I'll say this, DeMarcus Felton, you're probably not going to play again for the rest of the year. Sorry. Taison Wartzel, the starter, when he comes back, Taison Henry's probably number 2.
Taison Henry shows a lot, yeah.
Yeah, even ahead of Trey King. I think Taison Henry, he's a beast. No doubt about it. We're fine with it. DeMarcus Felton, sorry, you're not going to play much. Sirajic Thompson, you're probably going to get redshirted this year. I think now you're looking at it and saying, okay, we got Dalen Ward, we got Taison Henry, and maybe Trey King.
Nice.
I know King's your boy.
I know. Man, his work effort, his story, it's all great. But, yeah, Henry has just been fantastic. He's touching the ball, and he's not necessarily – he takes his time. But it's really fast. So, like, he makes appropriate decisions. His cuts are his cuts are clean. And he blows up when he gets some space. Like, the guy knows how to play football, right? So, seeing him go forward, yeah, it's going to become a real – when Ward comes back, it's going to be a real battle. I hope that Kingsbury tries to utilize both of them and see which one kind of comes out on top. Or, you know, maybe they both have their strengths. But I think something you keyed in on that's extremely special about this game is that they – that we keyed up on Ed Oliver, because that shows that we're keying up on who's kind of the star of their game, and then wearing that out. And then as we wore that out, it became a little bit easier to, you know, utilize the entire field, especially going forward with a lot of people down the road in the Big 12 conference that are great on defense. You know, having that kind of mindset of being able to go in and wear somebody out, like pick somebody apart or stay away or whatever it is, having that mentality probably will pay off for us in some aspect.
It's funny. Me and Jeremy are probably the two biggest Trey King supporters on the staff.
Yeah.
And I feel the same exact way. Like, Taison has showed me 100+ yards, 4 touchdowns. Like, you can't ignore that. He's going to play a large part going forward in this offense. And I think him and Bowman are probably the best young duo in the Big 12 right now.
You can argue the best young duo in the country right now. Absolutely. Like, 2 true freshmen killing it the way they're doing. Houston's not some scrub. Like last week we were talking about against Lamar and saying, yeah, okay, this is all fine and dandy and fun, but it's Lamar. This is Houston. They're some scrubs. They're not, you know, you have Ed Oliver is going to be a top 3 pick. You have De'Ara King, who we just talked about lighting up Arizona last week. This isn't some scrub team. Houston's a legit team, a team that's probably going to end up playing a New Year's Six Bowl at the end of the year. Going to have 10 nice wins. So this isn't some like trash team that we play. This is a good, and we talked about this being a warm-up game going into the season, but this is a good, legit team that we just were able to put up 63 points on.
Yeah, it's a hot yoga game.
And I think they're probably just as good as Oklahoma State is, who we're playing next week.
Ooh.
That's a hot take.
There
it is. I think they're pretty similar.
Let's go.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about. There we go. Hot take machine is on. Just as good. All right, speak on it, Dylan.
Yeah, speak on it.
Well, I just – Oklahoma State hasn't been, like, super impressive. I didn't pick them to beat Boise State, but I don't know if a part of me doesn't really believe in Taylor Cornelius, but it doesn't mean that I think they're a bad team, and that's kind of how I feel about Houston. I think they're both good teams, but I don't think they're both great teams. And so I kind of put them in the same tier as far as skill level.
I disagree, but we'll get to that later. So I do want to get to a kind of a 3-headed monster where you have a receiver. A lot of people are going to talk about 2-headed, but I do want to bring out Jadeon High, who was kind of unsung but still put up 120 yards. But then, of course, it's hard to just put up 120 yards when you got T.J. Vasher making Odell Beckham catches, scoring 2 touchdowns, and Antoine Wesley setting Big 12 records, 261 yards, 3 touchdowns, balling.
He beat the record at wide receiver university for most receiving yards in a game. Now, that's pretty impressive.
Wesley is one sneaky dude. Like, Kingsbury kind of talked him up early in the season, and I thought, you know what you're talking about. And then this game really showed. I mean, he's just shifty. Like, he's grabbing balls that I can't – I'm just like, okay, well, that's fantastic. And then he's making dudes miss. Like, that's something huge. The yards after the catch, he does it.
Yeah, when he took that 20-yard out route to the house, that was awesome.
Oh, my God, yes.
Made, like, three dudes miss.
Highlight after highlight.
And that's the thing, that Vasher doesn't really have that speed that Wesley has. Now, Wesley, he's a fast son of a gun, all right? He can take that thing and go. And so now, and think about this. Now you got Wesley and Vasher on the outsides. That's a deadly duo right there. We already knew about Vasher, and it kind of seemed to me like U of H was kind of spotting Vasher to start the game. And then Wesley and High were like, that's cool. You keep doing that.
It's so funny because going into the season, everyone was like, oh, how are they going to replace all that receiving production? And now it's like the least of my concerns.
Right, yeah.
Now I will say, and I'm just going to cut you off, but I will say I don't think we have much depth behind those three. And that's where it kind of goes. I think Keshawn Carter, Zach Austin, Seth Collins, they got a couple passes here and there, and they got a couple passes in the Lamar game too. But that is a big drop-off from the three we just named to the next three. So I think that's where, receiving-wise, we have a little bit of an issue. But I do agree that those three are doing just what everybody else did last year. It's not like when was the last time we said Cam Batson's name? You know, ooh. And not that Cam Batson's a scrub, he's playing for the Titans right now. But, you know, it's just, which wide receiver are you? We're just going to fill in and replace. We already talked about Vasher playing on Sundays. Now we got Antoine Wesley. Now I'm looking at Wesley like, man, he's also probably going to play on Sundays.
Yeah.
So just playmakers all
the time. You never know. Sometimes I have something.
I will say this, and I'm going to kind of go back to the defense, because we talked about how they keyed offensively on Ed Oliver. How about another defensive adjustment that was made? How about the team keying on Marquez Stevenson, who was killing us to start the game? And then saying, hey, Justice Parker, why don't you help over the top a little bit? Because Douglas Coleman getting killed right now. So how about you help over the top a little bit? How about we always have somebody spying Marquez Stevenson too? So Derek King, so not only is he King running in deep line, but in the secondary, he can't go to his favorite target. I thought that was a big help as well.
To clarify, Marquez Stevenson was the – he had that, like, 80-yard run, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy was great. And I don't want to hype, but, like, I'm glad – yeah, the adjustments are great. Again, we're just kind of keying up on star players, and it's figuring it out. It's happening in the huddle. Defensive guys are saying, hey, I'm getting beat. Hey, he's watching this guy with his eyes. I need help. And then that gets translated to the coordinator who – you know, they're fixing it. It's all coming together. Like, people are having conversation, which is the most important part of it, like, in game. But I, at the same time, I don't want to hype up Parker too much right now. I'm a bit upset with him, but yeah, I think that was a very important adjustment to make. And again, seriously, in the Big 12, going to make a big difference down the way when we get to some of these teams who just sling the ball.
I will say that was my biggest area of concern in this game, was the secondary. Like Jeremy kind of said, Justice Parker still hasn't shown me Justice Parker of last year, which is a bummer because we need Justice Parker of last year. The good news is we'll have Deshaun Johnson next week, so thank God.
Oh.
And I think that's the big thing. I think the secondary needs Deshaun Johnson so bad. I think that's what I see. And Justice Parker, I will say Justice Parker had one play. And I tweeted it from the Viva account. They really just pissed me off. The run play, and this was after that whole double forward pass BS that the refs didn't call. And after don't get me wrong, it was crazy. But the next play for you to have, there was Houston burst off that, 20-something yard run or whatever by Terrence Williams. It was a long run. Justice Parker, will he have made the play? I don't know. But the fact that he just stopped running with about 5 to 10 yards to go, and just jogged and basically tapped Terrence Williams on the side. I see he went in for a touchdown. to me, they're going to watch film either today or Monday. Sunday or Monday, they're going to watch film. And I would love Gibbs to just get into Justice Parker's ass about that, because that was ridiculous. That to me, if I'm a coach and I see that, anytime our coaches saw that in film, and they just get on anybody for lacking effort. And that's all that was, lack of effort.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Go ahead, Jeremy.
That's how you doing.
I was just going to say, I hope he's running laps around Jones AT&T Stadium right now, because, yeah, it was kind of ridiculous. If he really wanted to, he could have nudged him out before he got into the end zone. And that's, like you said, Albert, that's all anyone can ask for as a coach, is the bare minimum is effort.
Yeah, it's a bit like that's all you can, even if the defense has been bad. You know what it reminds me? So do you all remember Eugene Nebo?
No.
Eugene Nebo, he was a walk-on at Tech. He was there for Tech for maybe like 5 years, right? And he finally got a scholarship his fifth year. His last year, he was a starter because he played. It wasn't like he was some scrub. He played, finally got a scholarship his last year. He was a starting cornerback. Wasn't the best. The guy was like 5'9", short corner, wasn't the most talented, anything like that. But he gave effort all the time, and that's what made him a starter. And for Justice Parker, to me, I felt like it's kind of as if he got the scholarship and he's like, I'm good now. I'm good. I already got my scholarship.
Yeah, it's really been bothering me lately. The first half, second half, way different. I expected Gibbs did some kind of yelling magic in the locker room. They came out with a new passion of actually being, you know, energetic. But that first half, man, where are the turnovers? Where is the excitement? Where is, like, the defense from last year? I know Big Mike didn't bring all of the excitement. Yeah, he brought a lot of that hell with that little finger wag, but that can't have been all of it. Man, the energy has just gone down a lot, and it was so apparent in that first half. I really hope that we can keep that second half level throughout the rest of these games, man, because it's going to be problematic if people like, yeah, Justice Parker, who became the ball hawk last year, how many tackles does he even have now? Like, I'm not sure. He's not making himself known.
We had zero turnovers in the Houston game. Lamar, I believe we had three, if I'm not mistaken. But again, that was also three by the backup. We had none in the first half. But you're right. I mean, the Gibbs trademark is turnovers, and we haven't really done a great job of getting them. I will say one guy that has impressed me through the season so far has been Rico Jeffers. He has been a beast. And at times, actually, to be honest, I think he's played better than Jordan Brooks so far this year.
I think through three games, he's our best linebacker. Now, that being said, Dakota Allen finally looked like Dakota Allen. He had a slow start to the season, but he showed up in this game.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. Dakota, hey, my man Dakota was everywhere. He actually led the team in tackles, 9 tackles, 1 for loss, 2. And the thing about it is he did something in this game that I hadn't seen him do in the first two, which was make himself known in the passing game or in pass coverage as well. You know, last year he was just as good in coverage, getting interceptions, getting pass deflections. He had 2 pass deflections in the game, and you saw him basically covering the middle. Derrick King could not really go in the middle because Dakota Allen was patrolling there. Rico Jeffers, again, did a good job of that as well. I would say the linebackers made themselves known in this game more than they had in the other two.
The linebackers have to be the strongest element of this defense. I mean, they are 3 prolific dudes, and the fact that our defensive backs just in general kind of pull that down so much and make us look like an average defense upsets me, right? Because, like, we have a strong presence up front, but, man, can we get carved up in the back.
Yeah, and I think the biggest problem with our secondary, honestly, is not having Deshaun Johnson, Octavius Morgan, or Vontae Dorris is really starting. Vontae came back this game, but that's, I think, what's hurt us the most. He's still kind of seeming a little hurt. I don't know if y'all caught that, but it's still – he didn't have the same, you know, fiery passion that I usually see from Dorsey. And, you know, Morgan's going to be out the whole year. Johnson was out this game. He'll be back. But I think that's what hurt the secondary more than anything else.
True. Dorsey was along a lot of those option plays that Houston started to try to run or try to, you know, the reverse plays. He always had it keyed in, kind of kept that from getting out of hand. So kudos for him kind of coming in, putting that effort back in.
Well, and something I wanted to say is – as a corner, if you don't trust your safety, that causes a lot of problems. You know, if you don't know that you have the overprotection, you don't have to worry about the deep ball. You know, if knowing that Deshaun Johnson is there gives you confidence to play up a little bit. And I think
it's cradling you.
It all ties to Deshaun Johnson, and I really hope that having him back next week will really clean up the secondary.
Now if we can get someone to come back to replace Douglas Coleman. Hey-o!
Adrian Fry.
I'm good on him too. But anyways, last thing I want to say about this game is y'all were all talking down on my man Panizzolo after the Ole Miss game. God. How you like him now? Dude had them punts. I think had like four punts in the 20. Man was a baller.
Always took a good bounce.
Hashtag for the brand.
Once I saw we had an Aussie for a punter, I was like, oh, game over. We're good. I actually tweeted something. MVP of the game so far, Dominic Panizzolo. And the only person who liked it was Dominic Panizzolo.
Man, it's a trend now. Aussie punters, and next up is Hawaiian quarterbacks.
Yep.
Yeah, Colt Brennan. Yeah, for sure. For sure. So, speaking of which, let's go on and talk about some of the other Big 12 games that happened over the weekend. And we're not going to talk about the Hawaiian quarterback you were talking about, Tua, because we're not talking about Alabama, okay? I'm sick of them. We're not talking about them, all right? Because they're just going to win the national championship, and we all know it. So, anyways, let's go on and talk about some other Big 12 games that happened. Let's start off with the big game of the week that wasn't Texas Tech. TCU went to the Cowboy Stadium, to Jerry World, and played Ohio State. And they played a pretty close game until Ohio State routed off 20 points in 4 minutes.
Yeah, the first half of that game, I was like so impressed by TCU. I was like, oh my gosh, TCU might be for real. And then you're right. Second half, it all fell apart quick.
TCU came out looking like a playoff contending team. They really did. They played an aggressive game on both sides of the ball. Man, Gary Patterson yelling, doing the classic trademark yelling up and down the sideline. You're thinking like, wow, this team is – they're coming to play, and they're probably going to walk out of here with a win and then run the Big 12. But the third quarter, it snaps. Ohio State does what they do. You know, a lot of questions there surrounding their program, but, I mean, they still came out, and they laid up a lot of points in a short amount of time. Just TCU just didn't have the time or the answers to get it back.
And you know why TCU lost this game? Because of Sean Robinson. I've been talking about him all season. The guy is not that good. Like he's the reason for two of their touchdowns, both of them fumbling the ball away, not taking care of the ball. Like, and then he threw two picks himself. Like, so he himself turned the ball over four times. This Sean Robinson is, look, he turned the ball over three times. Sorry, but he will be good. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that he's gonna be trash or anything like that. I don't think he's Kenny Hill, but Sean Robinson is just not that good of a passer. He's not. And so when you have him come back 40, when you have him pass the ball 40 times, that is not the key to success. Darius Anderson had 154 yards. When they were running the ball, they were good. Let them just run the ball.
Yeah, you got to stick to your brand.
I've heard this same little Sean Robinson sucks talk from you so many times.
Because he does.
Are you on board or not? Are you on board?
What more do you need?
And the problem with this TCU team, honestly, you take away the quarterback, this team is probably the best team in the conference. Like, they're good. But I just – Oklahoma has Kyler Murray. West Virginia has Will Greer. Hell, now it looks like we have Alan Bowman. And TCU is still having a quarterback problem. Like, that's their problem.
Oh, yeah. So if TCU had a legit quarterback, they'd be right up there with West Virginia and Oklahoma.
Yeah, like, but it is what it is. So because of that, I think they're always going to have a chance to lose a game. They're always going to be there prime for the upset because Sean Robinson can be beat.
So I got a big question for you guys.
Yeah.
Is Texas back?
Oh, hell no. I know you're not talking about Texas. Texas Saturday beat the brakes off of USC at home, 37-14. And they came back.
Brakes. Yeah.
They were up. USC was up 14-3, looking like they were going to control the whole game, and then they decided to fall apart. And Texas, Matthew McConaughey flashed the horns up, and then USC was terrified. So they ended up losing the game, 37-14. And Texas actually received some AP votes.
Yep. It hurts. It hurts so bad.
Look, this game to me has less to do about Texas being back and more to do with about USC probably isn't that good of a team.
I think it has completely to do with that. I mean, they got whipped by Stanford the other day.
Yeah,
and USC's quarterback looked atrocious in this game.
Not a fan of JT Daniels, huh? JT Daniels is supposed to be the number one pick next year.
No, pass. Hard pass.
Yeah, I mean, it's just – the thing is – okay, let's not dog UT too much. UT played a decent game. I'm not going to lie. They played a decent game. They controlled the ball when they needed to, ran the score up. But they have a similar problem to TCU in that Sam Ehlinger, you have him – he was 15 for 33, right? Like, you're just – I was shocked he didn't turn the ball over. But that was kind of the difference between Ehlinger and Robinson, was that Robinson held the ball over three times. Ehlinger didn't, and so therefore Texas won. But, oh, God, Ehlinger is not very fun to watch him throw either.
Well, the thing with Ehlinger is, or the thing with Texas, I guess, is that they have a lot of offensive weapons. I think that's one thing that this game kind of did reveal. But, again, it's USC, so we're not sure. But, I mean, he's throwing to seven guys, all getting touches and all getting yardage. It's not like Texas is key, like trying to stick on one dude to hopefully kind of carry the team anymore. They're kind of passing it around, maybe because they have to, but they're giving it around. And the rushing game was able to get going as well.
As was their blocked field goal game.
The blocked field goal game.
I stopped watching after the blocked field goal. I was like, all right, well, this game's over.
So Jerm, let me ask you a question. Who was the leading receiver for Texas?
That'd be Humphrey, going to guess.
What was his first name? I can't. It escapes me at the moment.
I don't even know it. Lil Jordan.
Someone isn't listening to our podcast.
Lil Jordan.
Lil Jordan Humphrey.
Actually named after Michael Jordan, if I'm not mistaken.
That is true. He was named after Michael Jordan. But Lil Jordan, greatest name there is. My wife's not going to go for that if we do have another son. I don't have one son. But if we have a son, she's not going to go for that. But Lil Jordan's the greatest name ever.
What happens when Lil Jordan grows up?
Then it's funny. Big and muscular, you know? This is my friend, Lil Jordan. Lil Jordan weighs 320 pounds, and he can bench press a ball.
So I will say enough about Texas and more about Texas's arch nemesis, the team that they just cannot seem to get over, and that is Kansas.
There it is.
As Kansas beat the brakes off of Rutgers in the game of the week. That's just the game of the week, okay?
Chuck.
I've never seen Big 12 fans, except for Kansas State, root for one team so vehemently ever before. Everybody was behind Kansas to beat Rutgers, and they beat him decisively 55-14.
Who is not drinking the Kool-Aid at this point? I mean, not only did they play a good offensive game, boy, that running back can go, but the defense... They're playing defense now. Turnovers. Come on, man. It's time for Kansas to win one.
I will say, Peyton Bender and Miles Kendrick, both of them, woo, are they awful. Oh, my goodness. They are trash. But Puka Williams, every year Kansas has, like, a couple players that you're like, man, if they didn't play for Kansas, they'd be pretty good. Like, we would know about them. And, like, two players that I have on Kansas that I feel that way is, one is Joel Dineen. On defense, I think he's a really good linebacker, and if he didn't play for Kansas, we wouldn't hear more about him. And the other one is Puka Williams. Like, he's a tiny little guy, but the guy can move.
I'm choking again. I'm so excited.
Oh. What really impresses me, this weekend, Kansas Jayhawks have a win, and the Green Bay Packers or the Minnesota Vikings, neither of them have a win. So go Kansas.
So you're saying Kansas is the pride of the Midwest?
Yep.
So is Puka Williams somebody that we need to be afraid of come game week against Kansas?
No, it's still Kansas. anyways, next one up is
all right.
See, next Kansas. One up is the team that you for some reason think is just as good as Houston. Oh, Oklahoma State beat 17th ranked Boise State pretty decisively at home, 44-21. What did y'all think about the game?
I was surprised.
No, I'm going to go first because you're the one on the Oklahoma State. You're rooting for him in a way. I picked Boise like an idiot. I really wanted Boise to come in and win. There was a lot of talk about how Boise was kind of a complete team, especially defensively. You had a lot of questions for Oklahoma State. And for a little bit, it felt like Boise was going to kind of come back and take the game from Oklahoma State. But man, Gundy, I don't know. It was all on their court the whole time. He was just fooling us.
I'm not rooting for Oklahoma State. I picked Boise State in this game too. I was just very surprised. The Taylor Cornelius didn't look terrible. Justice Hill was doing Justice Hill things, and they got it done.
Y'all both picked Boise State because y'all are both idiots. I rode the cowboy train to victory because here's the thing about Taylor Cornelius. The reason why he's a starter is because he doesn't make mistakes, period. He just doesn't do it. He knows not to do it. If he makes mistakes, they're not going to win. And so that's basically what his role was in this game. He went out there, threw the ball around, said, "Hey, Justice Hill, I'm going to get you the ball. Tylan Wallace, I'm going to get you the ball. Dylan Stoner, I'm going to get you the ball." That's his job, and he did it really well. And so, and not only that, but he was able to run the ball in for a couple touchdowns. That's what I didn't expect. The fact that, you know, him, his big, tall, lanky self, was able to get himself into the end zone a couple times. So, Oklahoma State, their biggest thing is Taylor Cornelius doesn't scare anybody. It's their playmakers.
Yeah, I think that Oklahoma State should be known for being kind of a balanced team based off of its playmakers. Cornelius, like I said, is not giving anybody a stroke at night, but, man, he just has to give the ball to somebody who can. Like, there's a lot of people around him who can do it. And he's, like you said, efficient and not – he's not clumsy with the ball, so it's problematic. And Boise got the full brunt of that.
Well, at 3 weeks into the season, it looks like Justice Hill is the best running back in the Big 12. So helps to have that, too.
Which is funny. Who else? Iowa State's running back was really touted at the beginning, but he hasn't done too much.
Nope.
David Montgomery. So speaking of David Montgomery, nice segue, my man.
There we go.
He did go up against – he did go into his home field – playing the Oklahoma Sooners and came out with a big fat L. Lost 37-27. So David Montgomery, I mean, he played decently in this game. 21 carries for 82 yards and a touchdown. But I think his bigger problem, in my opinion, is the fact that Iowa State doesn't have much of a passing game. And because of that, teams have kind of owned in on him. That's a big reason why Iowa State lost to Iowa last week, was because they know, hey, Kyle Kemp. Now, this week was Zeb Nolan because Kemp was injured. We're going to make you throw. In this game, however, Zeb Nolan actually was slinging the ball around a little bit. He threw for 360 yards and two touchdowns. And I guess everybody looks – yeah, but everybody looks good when they're going up against Mike Stoops. So, what did y'all think of the game?
Kind of like what you were saying. It was exciting until it wasn't. At the beginning, I felt like Iowa State was – I felt like Iowa State had a chance, man. I was like, maybe this is enough. You know, they played Iowa, and it was a really disgustingly boring game and blah, blah, blah. But, like, that was their first game, so I feel for them and that they couldn't really get a game to practice in. But part of me wanted to believe that they could come out and show us that Oklahoma is beatable. And even though they really kind of didn't, the little bit did. And I think it's exactly what you said with the how much Nolan was able to sling the ball around. For a team that's not really not that efficient, I guess, in passing, to do that against Oklahoma, if Bowman continues to be Bowman, I guess, we might have a really good chance at carving up that defense. So this game, while hilarious to me because I just hate Iowa State in general, I think it had some benefits.
I think you were right, Albie. David Montgomery can't do much because he has no help on that team. And the fact that they only lost by 10 to Oklahoma with a backup quarterback was actually really impressive to me. I think it gives me hope going forward against Oklahoma. But, you know, we keep saying it every week. Kyler Murray is good at football.
He is. I think that, one thing is, I think what Oklahoma did was they did Keon and Hakeem Butler. Like, Hakeem Butler was like, pardon my French, but he was shitting on the defense for a good, like, two quarters.
He torched
and they
him.
Said, and yeah. Then halfway through the third quarter, they were like, okay, you know what? Let's make everybody else beat us. And that just couldn't happen. Like,
nobody else could
do anything. And I think this game ended up having just simply being the fact that Oklahoma has better players. So it was simply the fact of, okay, Kyler Murray's better than Zeb Nolan. Trey Sermon had a better game than David Montgomery. And Marquise Brown is better than Hakeem Butler. And that is as simple as that. It was just, our guys are better than your guys, so we're going to prove it.
No Campbell magic this year.
Yeah, definitely not. And so, speaking of magic and guys that are usually full of magic, Snyder Magic was alive and well back in Kansas as they put the beating down on UTSA. What did y'all think about that one?
I actually didn't watch any of it just because they were playing UTSA, and I highly expected Bill Snyder to come out and do Snyder things.
That's funny because my answer to this was like, this was the last game on my radar to watch, and I did not watch it at all.
Shame on
What's
the both.
What's your analysis, Albie? What's your analysis?
Shame on the both.
Save the day because we clearly did watch it.
This, let me tell you something about this game. This was the most boring game to watch on Saturday. It was awful. I flipped away from it quite a few times. But,
they had 41 points. How could it be boring?
Well, so, okay, here's the thing. So, coming into this game, I said that Baylor beat UTSA 37-20. And I've been flipping back and forth thinking, okay, who's better between Baylor and K-State? Because they both suck. And, but I said, okay, K-State, for them to prove they're better than Baylor, they got to beat UTSA more than Baylor did, right? And Baylor beat them by 17. What's K-State going to do? Well, they went out and beat them by, 24? Okay, you're a touchdown better than Baylor. Good for you. That's kind of my takeaway from this game. Skylar Thompson didn't look terrible like he has the first couple weeks. Their running game is crap. Isaiah Zuber is a good player. Isaiah Zuber is good. I wish he didn't play for the Wildcats because any other team he'd be a really good player. But this team sucks. UTSA just sucks more.
Apt analysis.
Speaking of teams that suck more, let's go to Baylor.
Boom! Nice segue.
Boom!
So Baylor, their first, 2 weeks in a row, Baylor says, you know what? We play worse teams. We're going to show you that we're improved this year. So you know what they go? They go out and they schedule Abilene Christian. They beat the crap out of Abilene Christian. Right? And so the next week, they're like, okay, we're going to show you. We're a good team this year. We're going to schedule UTSA as an even better than Abilene Christian. Go out, beat UTSA by 17. All right, not great, but I'm telling you, we're a good team. So we're going to finish the non-conference by playing a mid-tier Power 5 team like Duke, and we're going to beat them to really show you that we are built for the Big 12. And you know what happened? Duke went in there avoiding a hurricane and put the hurricane down on Baylor.
Damn, that was good.
You like that? You like
nice.
That?
I'm that saying, was nice. Yeah.
I ain't new to this and true to this.
I said on the last pod, I have a lot of respect for David Cutcliffe, and I knew better than to pick Baylor in that game. Like, it just wasn't going to happen.
Duke is 3-0, people. This is a revived football team, no longer a basketball school. No, I'm getting ahead of myself. Duke's quarterback Quentin Harris. To add perspective to how bad Baylor really is, Quentin Harris went 12 of 30. For 174 yards. Their best rusher was, again, Quentin Harris, going for 83 yards on the ground. The next up, the actual running back, Deion Jackson, went 83 on the ground. So it wasn't that just Baylor is trash. It's that Duke is not good. Baylor is worse. So that's, between that and K-State, the least exciting game. I'm just happy that Duke got a win. Like, what? How great is that when you have a team like Baylor, who wants to prove that they're good, come out, beat the brakes off these other two teams, then want to do it a third time to just kind of build that rapport. It's that cocky chicken strutting around, and then it just meets a shotgun at the end. And, oh, man, satisfying, truly satisfying.
Yeah, I mean, this I think this game is going to bring Baylor back down. I think it brings anybody back down. I thought that Baylor would be that much more improved. That's the last game of the that happened on Saturday. West Virginia didn't play NC State as that game was canceled, as they get ready for Hurricane Florence. But me and Dylan kind of talked about this before, Jeremy, and that I believe that there are three hierarchies in the Big 12 right now. And that top hierarchy is Oklahoma, West Virginia, TCU, Oklahoma State, right? The bottom hierarchy is Kansas, K-State, and Baylor. And I think this loss cemented Baylor into that bottom hierarchy. And the middle hierarchy is Tech, UT, and Iowa State. And to me, Tech has now kind of – us beating Houston has moved us kind of at the top of that middle hierarchy.
Fair.
Tech's, Texas beating USC has kind of put them, also cemented their place. And even though Iowa State's 0-2, they didn't look terrible. They look commendable in the Oklahoma loss. So I still right. keep it.
It's Oklahoma. But, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, would you agree with that hierarchy?
I would. The only question mark is Oklahoma State for me. And it's just because Oklahoma State has consistently looked good and then failed to like complete their mission. So I just don't put a lot of stock into that. But I would agree that if they were even in the middle tier, they would be above us, obviously. So if they're at the bottom of that first tier, then yeah, no complaints here.
I'm glad you said that, Jeremy, because I said the same thing last week. I was like, no, they're not in the top tier. They're with us.
Y'all still don't believe in Oklahoma State? They just beat Boise.
Hey, let's bring up the question next weekend, and we'll have a firmer grasp. We'll have actual good evidence of where kind of everybody shapes up.
Yeah, I've got to go study the tape on Oklahoma State. I got to really dive in before I can make a real analysis. But from the eyeball test, I'm not too impressed.
Let's say they're the wall in between us and the top tier.
Yeah,
At least they don't have Sean Robinson as their quarterback.
Damn, you're not wrong.
So, kind of, and we're gonna let's go ahead and dive a little bit into that game that we're gonna have next week. A little bit. We're gonna have a preview pod coming up next week, but I do want to get your take on it, Jeremy. Oklahoma State, Texas Tech. The game's gonna be played in Stillwater next Saturday. What takeaways can you take from this Houston game that you think can be applied to the Oklahoma State game?
Kind of my first observation, I guess, is – or the first observation I had I think applies best is what is the word? Adjustments. vocabulary word of the day is adjustments.
There's that Texas Tech education.
Education.
Yeah, coming in strong. I think that one of the biggest parts about this game coming up is that we're facing Cornelius, which is a funny name to me because it always makes me think of those Christmas claymation movies. But the guy who doesn't make mistakes, we need to force him to make mistakes. And one of the problems we're having is we're not forcing a lot of turnovers for a defense that's known for turnovers. So there's a lot of, again, more question marks on this season, but this game is the opportunity for us to go out with adjustments made before we play. So like practices this week, watching tape, getting the defense organized and ready. And really, I feel most confident in Bowman going into this game. But having that overall mentality that we don't need to stick to one plan the whole game through. We need to adjust with the way the game goes because we can key up on people like Cornelius and maybe force a turnover, force some kind of pressure to make him make a mistake, there's going to be cracks, and we need to capitalize on that, right? We can't just kind of go in and be like, well, we're going to run 46 run plays and then, 54 pass plays and mix it up and, like one trick play because that's fun. I think we need to go in with the mindset like we do have a game plan, but there needs to be some vulnerability with accepting that there's holes in where what we thought was good and filling it rather than just kind of letting it get out of hand. So the second half of the Houston game, I think, really showed us in a great way that these coaches on both sides of the ball are really coming kind of into their own, into the coaching profession, seeing issues in their philosophies and fixing it to kind of prove for a more efficient game plan. But the first half, like if we come out with that first half game like we did against Houston, I think Cornelius and the rest of those guys are going to carve us up pretty good. And if it's that bad, it may be – kind of insurmountable in the second half. So like I was saying earlier, like this Big 12 competition is going to step up and we need to kind of make sure that we have it all taken care of come first half rather than the second half, because that just usually doesn't work out.
So one thing I'll say is that two games this year, going to two big games we've had this year, Ole Miss and Houston, we've come in thinking that the defense is the strength of our team. That's not really the Texas Tech way. It's not what we're comfortable doing. And the defense kind of showed that they're not comfortable with it either. Now we're back to our comfortability. Now we're back to saying, oh, we have a quarterback and receiving core. Okay, never mind. Defense, y'all can go back to being the our backup. No pressure on y'all. So now I think we're back to where we're used to. We're back to where Kingsbury is more comfortable saying, okay, we're going to go out. We're going to put up points. Gibbs, y'all just make sure that y'all don't let the other team put up as many points as we do. Right?
What do you think that the defense thrives on having the spotlight off of them?
I'd say so. I think the thing about it is that I remember when I was in high school, my defensive coordinator used to always say that our goal as a defense is to make sure that we just hold the other team to less points than what we score. Right? Simple concept, right? But when you think about it, it is simple, but it makes a lot of sense. If your offense puts up 60, your job is only to make sure that they only put up 59. Right? But if you're off, but it's a lot more difficult if you don't have if your defense is now having to only force the other team to 20 because your offense can't do it. That's when your spotlight's on you. It's easier to say, okay, our offense just put up 3 touchdowns in a row. We just got to stop one of these guys. We can do that. And so I do think that it's easier for a defense when the offense is buzzing like they were buzzing on Saturday. And Oklahoma State's defense, though they have – one way I'll say that they are similar to Houston is that they do have certain playmakers that you can pin down. So Calvin Bundage on defense is their main guy. And then you also have on offense Justice Hill, J.D. King, and then Tylan Wallace. Those are guys that you can kind of pinpoint. Or really, Dylan Stolner more than Wallace. But these are the guys that you can pinpoint and say, you know what? Let's focus on these guys. Let's focus on this. Let other guys beat us. And by doing that, I do think the Tech can kind of win in a similar fashion. I do want us to beat Oklahoma State because, Lord Jesus, it's been 84 years, like that gif says. But,
yeah.
But, it's I'm going to give my prediction later, but let me all know it ain't going to be a good one.
All right.
But what about you? What about you, Dylan? You got anything to say?
I kind of
predictions.
I'm saving my predictions. We'll pocket those, but I kind of disagree with you in that I do think the defense is going to play better next week. Having Deshaun Johnson back is going to be huge. I think Alan Bowman isn't going to throw the ball 60 times again in this game because we're going to have De'Leon Ward back, hopefully. I don't know the status of that. We'll make sure to have that question answered before the next pod. But between him and Tazan Henry, I think we'll run the ball more than you'll see a traditional Texas Tech team run the ball, and we'll lean on the defense a little bit, and I think it'll be a pretty good game.
So before we end this pod, I do want to say, and I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but Dylan, we've already kind of talked about how important this season is for Kingsbury and et cetera, et cetera. And I personally have already said that I didn't think that we could go into conference season 1 and 2. Was the Houston game the biggest win of Houston? Lord Jesus.
Sorry. You have to cut that out.
anyways, was the Houston game the biggest win of Kingsbury's career?
No, the biggest win of Kingsbury's career was against Texas in Texas, what, 2 years ago?
Oh.
Second biggest. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You're fair enough. But see, me personally, I always believe that. Or are you talking about the first time we beat him in Texas?
The Jakeem Grant fumble risky.
Jakeem Grant round? That would be the first time. Okay, fair enough. So that's fair enough. I look at it like this. If we would have went 1-2 going into conference play, then you're asking Kingsbury to win at least 6 games in conference when he's never won more than 4. I do think the Houston win was just he had to have it and he got it. And who knows? I mean, now you're looking at an offense that's up to Kingsbury standards, and you're looking at a revival in a sense, and you're saying, I know Kingsbury haters won't like this, but this might be good enough to do it. Like, can we get – now you're looking at, okay, because I still believe that 7 wins is really all he needs to stay on for another year, right? And so, okay, I just told you that there are 5 – in my rankings this week, I'm probably going to have Tech at 5. So I just – a little sneak peek there. But I just told you that there are 5 teams that I think Tech is either at the same level of or better than, right? And Houston – to me, Houston – is just as good, if not better, than Texas, Iowa State, K-State, Kansas, Baylor. So if we can beat Houston, that's 5 teams we should be able to beat. So the fact that we beat Houston, I think that's just – it's huge for him going forward. A loss to Houston, I think, would have dang near put a – it would have put his first nail in the coffin.
And it's just funny, this fan base, like, had we lost to Houston, then everyone would have been calling for his head. But now that we beat Houston, everyone's like, oh, I want four more years of Bowman and Kingsbury. And so it's really
well,
funny.
Well, that's how it always goes.
I know, but
it's hard to find an ebb and flow.
But
yeah, I mean, we'll see as the season goes on. I mean, it's conference play is going to be huge. We want a winning season. I think that's where it kind of now it kind of boils down to doing something he's also never done. Is I think it's in fact he has to have a winning season in conference, and that's it is what it is. He has to have a winning season that'll get us to 7 wins. I don't know if that's necessarily enough for an extension, but it's at least enough to bring him back for another year. But he has to get that winning season in conference. And luckily for him, the conference is pretty weak this year. I mean, like I said, he can get it.
Yeah, I mean we have the weapons to do so, and the coaching on paper to do so. So it is. There's lots of holes that we can, you know, break open in this conference. Like you said, it's just you got to do it, right? But that's the hardest part.
And not only that, we've got a great recruiting class coming in next year. So I really want him to get to that threshold so we can have one more year for him to really turn this thing around.
Y'all are both looking at one more year to turn it all around. Me personally,
I said he was out.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, me personally, I'm going around and I'm looking at Conference USA and I'm saying, you know what?
You're looking at UNT.
UNT? y'all just beat Arkansas. Oh, that's quite interesting.
That special teams play was beautiful, by the way. The fake fair catch by UNT.
Yeah, that's a... So I'm looking at teams like UNT, you're looking at Troy and saying, you know what, Troy? You know, your head coach there, he looks pretty good. Looks pretty good, Troy. So we'll see. We'll see. But that's all we got for this pod. Jeremy, what you gotta say to the people?
Bearded Kingsbury is 2-0 right now. Get on the train now because we are blasting through this conference. And if we don't, then I never said that and don't come for me.
What about you, Dylan?
Long live the king. 4 more years. I'm Twitter famous. And once again, I whooped Albert bad in fantasy football. So we had this argument. Who was better? That's proof in the pudding right there.
Let me be clear. I am not. So Dylan is on his own level with this 4 more years of Kingsbury. I am not on that level. Nobody associate me with this psychopath. I am just saying... Kingsbury is sporting an awesome beard now, and he's being a little more gutsy, so I like that. So I'm with Bearded Kingsbury. I am not with Old Cliff. Old Cliff was a wuss. We have upgraded.
Don't. Okay. Jeremy agrees with me on everything. Just,
I do not. It's Please fun. Do not associate.
I will say Seth Luttrell is jacked. I just want to throw that out there. And so that's the last thing I want to say. So for Jeremy Gillen and Dylan Smythe, this is Albie Shore. You've been listening to the Air Raid Podcast presented by Viva the Matadors. Stay wrecked, people.